Little Feet. And the reason I play that song, of course, is because our own John Dubois, John D, has passed here and left a big hole in our hearts at KZFR. We've lost a lot of other people recently, but that song goes out to his family. And we're going to have a day of remembrance for him, a program that's going to be April 3rd from 11 to 2 here on KZFR. So I hope you'll tune in for that. And my name is Chris. The show is the Peace and Justice Program. We're on every Friday from 11:30 to 1 with rotating hosts. It's my deep pleasure to be with you today to present to you some wonderful people doing important work in our world. My first guest is Kimberly Robinson. She is an independent consultant on reproductive justice issues, including the health of Black women. Kim is currently working with Black Women for Wellness as community liaison, and she oversees operations in their Northern California office. She's also the manager of 5 federally qualified health centers in Lodi and Stockton. Welcome, Kim.
Having me.
There we go.
How exciting.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't even have you potted up there. I know you were a programmer also on KZFR. You did a program for many years called It's Your Body while you were director of the Women's Health Specialist. So you're well aware of little computer glitches and things that we do wrong here at the station.
I am well aware, and I am excited because this is coming around full circle now. So, yes, yes.
Yeah, and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful because I didn't realize just how busy you are. So I know I don't want to rush, but I know how busy you are and appreciate this 25 minutes we have together. I was able to interview the director of Black Women for Wellness, the executive director, Jeanette Robinson Flint, back in last August. And at that point, we were really deep into the COVID epidemic, and yet she had the grace to tell me all the things that they were doing. It didn't seem like they were missing a beat. But you've been an essential worker through this whole thing with everything you've been doing. And I wanted to see about your reflections in the Central Valley there and in Northern California about the situation for workers, essential workers this year, and also health equity, because I know that you work with low-income people, people of color, and I just would like to get your reflections.
Thank you. So, yes, I am an essential worker, being that I manage the 5 federally qualified health centers. And so, you know, last year when COVID first hit us, we had to really redesign the way that we look at healthcare and how we see our patients. And so, you know, we had a team, fortunately, we had a team of staff that was just dedicated to COVID, dedicated to how do we keep our staff safe, how do we keep our patients safe, and how do we still provide health care. And so, you know, we did have some challenges in that, but for the most part, I think we did a really, you know, great job of, you know, being able to have all of those things work. Like, you know, most places, we limited the number of patients that we had coming into the clinic. And we started offering telemedicine and telehealth services and video visits. And that was something that we hadn't done in the past, but it was something that we had to learn to do really quick so that we could still be able to, you know, see our patients, because just because we're in a pandemic, you know, healthcare is still happening. And, you know, and we wanted to also make sure that we were able to reach out to, like you said, you know, patients who are underserved or, you know, in areas that before the pandemic happened, you know, had challenges getting to the clinics. And now, you know, there's another layer being added on to that. And so we created a team, and we had this team prior to COVID, but it really kicked in full gear once COVID and the pandemic started, where we went out to the shelters, we went out under the bridges, we went out wherever people were and offered healthcare services. And then also had programs that would cover payment for those services. So, you know, we're still learning. Fast forward a year, you know, there's still changes. Now the vaccine is out, and so we are offering, you know, vaccines to our patients and to, you know, communities. We just did a vaccine event for farm workers last week, and we were able to vaccinate 100 farm workers. And actually right now at my site, I have a vaccine clinic going where we've vaccinated so far this morning almost 100 community and patient members. So yeah, so, you know, we're learning, we're growing, and we're still trying to make sure that we meet the needs of the communities.
That is so inspiring. I was just sitting here going, oh, I love hearing something positive for a change. I just feel like so much bad news, you know, surrounding us all the time. And yet there are people like you and your team doing such essential work. So I want to thank you for that. And
thank you, and you as well, Chris, because you're a healthcare provider too. So
yeah, but I took
I
took a year off. sorry, but yeah, women's health specialists, where I'm employed part time now, they kept working through this whole thing, and mm-hmm. you know, and they kept everyone safe, and it was, you know, it's a really beautiful thing when people work together, when they
right.
actually can make it work, because they all are invested in it. And you know, I wanted to, you're the last woman I'm going to talk to in Women's History Month. It just zipped away. And mm-hmm. I know you've been involved in feminist and anti-racism work since well before I first met you back in 2004 when you were a director at Women's Health Specialists. And I was just wondering about what about women's health, women's history, sorry, is so important to you, you know, the women that shaped you or inspired you, whether they're historical figures or personal ones, what struggles or achievements of these women help shape your life, Kim Robinson?
So I'm going to take it back to when, you know, I first started at Women's Health Specialists as a health worker. You know, that's what our title was. We were health workers, and just learning about you know, my body, learning about what was happening in the world and how can I get involved. And so really working at Women's Health Specialists really shaped who I am today. So I give them much props. You know, Eileen, Kitty, and Shauna, they were instrumental in my knowledge base and my being able to learn how to do self-cervical exams and then being able to share that internationally and also, you know, locally and nationally, you know, doing self-cervical exam groups. And then, you know, and with that, I have two daughters. And so I wanted to make sure that I passed on my knowledge to my two daughters. Also, being Director of Health Services at Women's Health Specialists and overseeing, you know, four of the local abortion clinics, you know, that also really gave me knowledge and made me want to be one to fight for women's rights, fight for equality, fight for access. So that really is what kind of shaped me my adult years. Now, moving back, of course, my mother and my grandmothers were very instrumental in my upbringing and, you know, giving me that foundation of, you know, not settling for what I know is less than what I deserve and having my voice to be able to speak up for that and for others.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a combination of my upbringing, a combination of my work experience, and then just all of the women over the years that I have been, in, you know, involved with and being able to network with have really been, you know, the pillar of who I am today and where I want to go. And now working with Black Women for Wellness, that is also giving me another perspective because we're doing a lot of policy work around Black maternal and infant health. We're also doing some policy work around chemicals that are in products that are being sold to the Black community, to the Hispanic community, to Asian communities, because we find that a lot of those products have high cancer-causing chemicals in them. And so we're doing legislation and we're doing some research around that. And then one thing that we're doing that's really huge right now is we are writing a report that is going to be used by the state. And so Black Women for Wellness, in collaboration with the Center for Health Equities out of UC San Francisco, we have teamed together and we created a statewide advisory committee of 16 Black women throughout Southern, Northern, and Central Valley in California. And we get together and we have a report that we're writing. It's a data report that there hasn't been a report written in over 30 years, which is really sad. That, you know, nothing has been written around Black maternal and infant health. So we are writing a report that the state will use. And, you know, we're also looking at what's happening in the community. So April 11th through the 17th is Black Maternal Health Week. And so we're going to be doing focus groups throughout those three areas. Southern, Northern, and Central Valley of California. And we're going to be contacting women and finding out what their birth stories are. And we're going to be using their stories so that we can shape the report and make sure that we try and bring awareness to some of the, I guess it's just structural, institutionalized biases and racism that is happening in healthcare, you know, around women of color. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited about that. And then we have a couple of bills out that we're going to be lobbying for here in the next couple of months to come, also around Black maternal and infant health and women's, you know, women's rights and what we want to fight for. So,
That's great. That's great. And, you know, I listened to you talking about women's empowerment, women's self-control of our own bodies, you know, our knowledge base, and women coming together, such as women's health specialists, or in the case of the Black Women for Wellness. And yet, in the big picture, we still see women being objectified, eroticized, undervalued. More women are unemployed during the pandemic and are more financial insecure than men at this point. There's so much misogyny that's come down from the Trump regime, racism and hatred. And we saw this last week when a young white male went on a killing spree, killed 8 women, 6 of Asian descent, and became the first challenge of a Georgia hate crime law. And I was wondering if you could step back from the positive things that you're doing to just look at this situation of racism and using this example of these women and what's been happening to Asian people during this time that Trump has baited his base for hatred of Asian people. Can you just talk about that a little, Kim?
Yeah, so you know, it's not just recent that this has been happening. I mm-hmm. mean, this goes back for years.
Yes.
And so I think with the, when, you know, our last administration that we had, it just gave people a platform to speak what their, you know, true selves were that may have been hidden. It's very sad, and it's very sad that still in 2021 that we're still facing all of these racist acts that are happening, and they're being justified sometimes. Which, you know, I'm not saying that when I say that, I don't say that it's rightfully justified, but our society is letting it be rightfully justified, which is horrible. And so what we have been doing, you know, locally, because you have to start from within, you know, and so we have been holding groups at, you know, some of our local community centers and getting together and talking about what's happening and how can we bring change in our communities? Because I think as you start with your communities and it starts spreading, then, you know, like we saw in Georgia when, you know, it was election time, you have to mobilize. Like, you have to get together. You have to have a positive agenda to try to bring forth positivity in this negative time. And so, you know, and then I also look at my own, because I have a son, you know, and I am afraid for him every time he leaves my house. Mm. And I should not be, you know, and he feels like, you know, I'm babying him, but I'm not babying him. I'm trying to give him tools to keep him safe in a society that don't value his life. And that is so sad to me.
It's terrible.
You know, it just brings tears to my eyes, because he can't thrive as a young man that he, you know, that he deserves to be, because he can be looked at as a threat. He doesn't have a threatening bone in his body, but he can be looked at as a threat just because of, you know, his appearance. And it's just, you know, so I talk to my kids, you know, and try to make them as aware as possible. And then, you know, like I said, we have groups where we get together as a community and talk about all of the injustices that happens in our community, and who do we need to talk to, you know, move policies forward, and, you know, and how do we bring about change? So, you know, so that's what we have been doing. And, you know, that's what I have been doing. And, you know, it's just horrible. Sometimes I get to the point where I don't even want to turn on the TV because, you know, you just hear story after story after story. And it's just not right. It's not right. But until we all start having a voice and speaking up, it'll continue. And so, so, you know, I just urge everyone to, you know, get your groups together and start making a plan, and let's start, you know, making people face what, you know, have some consequences in their actions. And once that happens, I'm hopeful that, you know, maybe we can bring about change.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, this is Trans Awareness Month, too. And I know that the people that are most at risk of hatred and violence are trans women of color. And I was wondering if you wanted to address that also, since as a healthcare practitioner, you interface a lot with communities of color and people who are transitioning, and you know, we provide healthcare to people throughout their lives, not throughout their lives, but their reproductive lives. And it'd be great if you could address their concerns too.
Yeah, so that again, it starts within your organization. And so what we have done, you know, at my organization is educating our staff. You know, educating our staff to know how to not be disrespectful and know how to not be judgmental, you know, and to be open. At one of my clinics, actually on our badges, we have buttons of the LGBTQ community flag, and we also have a transgender flag. So we have buttons on our name badge, on our name badges, so that if someone comes into our clinic, at least visually they know, okay, this is a safe place to be. We've changed, you know, some of the language in our forms and stuff, and, you know, and also the language of, you know, when we're talking to people when they come in. And I think it's just meeting people where they are and find out, you know, how do you want to be addressed? How would you like, you know, your health care to look? But that's not everywhere. It's not everywhere. And so, you know, so it really starts within the organizations. And, you know, and that I got from working at Women's Health Specialists, because, you know, we were open to everyone, every woman who, you know, or, you know, every person, I should say, who came into our doors and treated them how, you know, they deserve to be treated, with respect, with not being judged, and, you know, with being open. And so I've kind of taken that with me throughout, you know, my my healthcare years.
And Kim Robinson, I have only one more question because we're out of time, but I know that I knew that would happen, but I was wondering if you could address the threats to Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court is going to vote on this soon, and how can people be organized and ready if Roe is overturned?
So the really, like California, you know, I'm hopeful that we're pretty progressive in the way that, you know, it'll fall down to the state's decision on, you know, how that will look if, you know, there's something that's overturned in the, in, you know, at the Supreme Court justice. So the state that really concerns me is, you know, the southern states, because even right now in the culture of, you know, we have Roe v. Wade in place, there's so many obstacles that women are facing. And so, you know, trying to be a bridge, you know, for women in those areas. And, you know, I just go back to my my days of working in, you know, reproductive health care and almost, you know, being kind of like a underground way of women getting access, you know. And so knowing who to call, knowing where to call, you know, knowing, you know, how to reach out and get resources. So, you know, so it'll be a lot of that, a lot of networking under the radar, trying to figure out how we can, you know, still offer services and get help to women, you know, in those states that, as I say, right now even have issues. And if, you know, if Roe gets overturned, then it's not going to be, it's not going to be a pretty sight. But, you know, we'll just have to really band together and, you know, try and help those women who need help as best as we can.
That's right. Well, thank you, Kimberly Robinson. I really appreciate you, your leadership, and the work that you're doing. Thank you for immunizing all those people and everything you're doing. And thanks for taking the time out of your busy day in order to talk to the listeners here at KZFR.
Thank you, Chris. I'm so excited, and I miss KZFR. I wear my shirts all the time, and, you know, I'm always trying to tune in when I can. And so, but I really appreciate you inviting me on. And like I say, it's full circle now. I've gone from programmer to now being a guest.
That's
so
<right.
laughs> And I appreciate it.
And I hope you'll come back again. Thank you, Kim.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. It's 2 minutes to noon. I wanted to let you know that very impressive author Ibram X. Kendi will be the guest speaker at the Book in Common lecture. His book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, is the 2020-2021 Book in Common, and there will be a virtual conversation with him moderated by Jim Jackson, of the Professor of English at Chico State and Associated Students President, and Bree Halbert. The conversation will situate the central themes of the book, including definitions and examples of anti-racism and racism, and discuss how to move from reflection to taking meaningful actions on issues of racial equity. Wednesday, April 21st, 5:30, and you can go to the university box office in order to participate in that. It is a free event, and I do recommend the book, and you can pick it up at the bookstore here in Chico or any other outlet. And I want to put on a song for you, but first want to thank some underwriters, and then I'll get to our next guest. This program, the Peace and Social Justice Program, is made possible by the generous contributions of all of you KZFR supporters. And thank you so much for supporting us during the pledge drive. I can't tell you how much it means to me as one of the hosts of this show to have your support. So thank you for that. And I also want to thank Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op is open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And also like to thank Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market. Let's hope. And the Saturday Farmers Market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. And also want to thank Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farmstar Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The phone number there is 343-2056. And lastly, we'd like to thank Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, which is family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980. They want to remind listeners to think for themselves but drink with others. So let's go on to the next programmer. I'm going to play Aaron Neville here. This is an oldie but a goodie, so enjoy.
I was born by the river in a little tent, oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. Oh, it's been a long, long time coming, but I know say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me.
All right. How we treat our brothers, so important.
Yes.
Yes, and so I have on the line with me Charles Bethune. He's a national award-winning graphic designer, started and operated a sign company in Chico for 40 years that employed people to this, still employs people to this day. He's been a guest lecturer and consultant at San Francisco State University, the University of Nevada, Chico State, and the Osher Institute. Chico News and Review was 2013 local hero, every year local hero to me. Director and designer of the Peace Panel Project, blog and traveling exhibit, founder of Career Builders, which was one that we talked about before on this show, board member and Tiny Homes Project Coordinator of Chico Housing Action Team, and more recently, board member of North State Shelter Team, involved in direct camper aid and lobbying the city, county, and Chico Unified School District for more programs to address our shelter crisis. Let's jump right in. Charles Withune, welcome to the Peace and Justice Show. I know that people know you from a lot of venues, but I think number one would be Simplicity Village, because you're at the farmers markets Wednesday and Saturday, teaching, talking, sharing. Talk about that dream of yours, Simplicity Village.
Chris, thank you for having me on the show. It started maybe in 2014. Steve Schutte put out a publication, Street Chatter, I believe it was, and the lead-off article was by Leslie Johnson and Bob Trausch explaining Opportunity Village that was going on in Eugene and what a great model that was, and why couldn't Chico get something going on like that. And I got a hold of that, and I went to Eugene, and I talked to Pastor Dan Brandt, and I talked to the people that live there that told me little tiny house saved their life. And we got going on some projects here in Chico. It's remarkable. Bob Trausch and I gave presentations that received a standing ovation, typically, from 50 service groups in this area. I even know there were 50 service groups in this area. I mean, what are you talking about? Lions, the Rotary, the Kiwanis? I don't even know what kind of animal Kiwanis is. Anyways, here we go. Launching into trying to, you know, get some community support for a little tiny home village for unhoused elderly. And it was the most popular program ever presented to the city of Chico if you use their Engaged Chico poll as a guide. Simplicity Village got more than twice as many votes in favor of it than any other proposal that the city council ought to do. The city council directed staff to get a contract going so we could get Simplicity Village going. And for reasons I don't want to go into right now, that contract was insufficient, and Simplicity Village is not happening. But the goal of a more efficient and more robust response to our shelter crisis in the form of tiny homes for the disadvantaged in Chico is alive and well in Everhart Village Project.
So,
we expect,
I want to stop you there, Charles.
Sure.
I'm talking to Charles Bethune. He is deep in the trenches of trying to shelter unhoused people. And you want to skip over the ugly parts about who and why Simplicity
right.
Village didn't go forward.
Right.
Who and why Orange Street Shelter didn't go forward. who and why we have a conservative city council. So I respect that because you have so much to say. But I just want to say there is a concerted effort to deny housing for people. And I think we shouldn't overlook that,
right,
Charles. So your next thing, you were talking about Everhart Village, and this is named after a dear friend of ours, Dan Everhart. And
right.
I'd like to know the status. I think everybody would. Go ahead.
We expect the last of the paperwork to be completed in about a month. We have one contract signed. We've agreed on the terms of the second. When that gets done, we expect it to be on the agenda on the second meeting in April for the city, for the supervisors, for the county supervisors. They should approve it then, at which point we can finish the engineering, get some estimates, schedule the contractors, get the trenching and grading going on, bring in the tiny homes, get them finished, and begin to house timed-out referrals from Butte County Behavioral Health who would otherwise be put out on the street.
Hmm.
This Everhart Village is going to be 21 little tiny homes behind Iris House at 556 Cohasset Road in Chico. It's got no residential neighbors and good access to services. And if things go well, we hope to be housing about 30 people before Christmas. So that's the good news. That's a real fun project that is well underway.
Yeah, that's very positive, and kudos to all of you who have worked so hard on that. I'd like to get right into the fact that our city council members sent out an email saying that council members have made it clear that they no longer are interested in an outdoor shelter environment and are significantly leaning toward not providing any additional shelter beds. The shelter beds that are pending are not available to people now, and many of them won't be even ready in 2 years. We have perhaps 35 to 45 beds available at the Torrey shelter on any given night.
If you qualify,
that's right.
If you've done the paperwork, if you've gotten your COVID test,
mm-hmm.
if you've come in at the right times, there's, yes, there are between 35 and 40 beds available open at the Torrey shelter, last I heard, but it's not just walk-in emergency shelter.
Right, yeah, and that's a good point. So we have over 200 people living in tents right now, most of them because of evictions that have happened over the last few months are all consolidated now at what they call the Humboldt Park, or also called Windchime Park, or at Comanche Creek. And I'm sorry for our listeners who are not in the Chico area. I know this topic is very Chico-centric at this point, but it applies throughout California in various ways, and different communities are handling it different ways. But we really need this information from Charles Bethune. So are we concerned about evictions from these last remaining places for these people?
I have seen the eviction notices yesterday They're evicting two more camps, probably Monday morning at 8 o'clock.
And where?
I'm sorry, I have to go back to the quote you just did from that email from the city that talked about not providing any more shelter beds.
Mm-hmm.
This is an email from just a few days ago. It's a statement made in the midst of a declared shelter crisis that is the most urgent and tragic human crisis to hit the streets of Chico in my lifetime. We're counting 20 people who've died outside in recent history. To say you're not going to provide any more shelter beds under these conditions is outrageous. Everyone who can hear these words needs to contact the city council and ask for an end of the sweeps until there's a proper campground established, or you're going to be part of the problem. Come to the city council chambers April 5th at 6 o'clock for our Housing Justice Block Party. We're going to have live music, refreshments, and have some fun, and remind our counselors that some of us are concerned about the shelter crisis.
Yeah.
Back to your last statement, I want everybody to look at the front page of today's Enterprise Record.
Mm.
I was thrilled. It highlighted Ed McLaughlin looking at 40 acres that he has offered North State Shelter Team 5 acres of for 5 years to run an emergency shelter campground. And we have submitted to the city councilors this morning a outline draft proposal for a RV camp and micro shelter standalone campground that could be operational on this property in just a matter of weeks. All it needs is a proper easement access, and the grading and gravel road put in could be done in just a few days with the if we had the political will and enough of our listeners come into the city council chambers April 6th at 5 p.m. and writing the city councilors. And this, we even have a proposal in front of the Chico Unified School District. Hmm. If you read state statute 8698, it says that any special district or jurisdiction defined as a special district like a school district or a city or a county can declare a shelter crisis. And in that situation, the provisions, I'm quoting now from state statute 8698, quote, the provisions of any state or local regulatory statute, regulation, or ordinance prescribing standards of housing, health, and safety shall be suspended to the extent that strict compliance would in any way prevent, hinder, or delay the mitigation of the effects of a shelter crisis. This is in effect right now in Chico, so the flimsy excuses that are thrown out to slow down moving ahead with a campground are in contradiction to state statute 8698.
Charles, I wanted to back up. Now, in regards to evictions, as I understand it, the eviction was posted by Caltrans, and it had to do with Caltrans property. We're not referring to the large centers where people have congregated at Windchime and Comanche Creek. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, it's on both sides of the freeway on-ramp there that borders Bidwell Park if you're trying to get on the freeway or off the freeway near 8th Street.
Okay. And you've been involved with physical support for campers. Can you talk about what is like for them to have to uproot their lives when they've been sheltering in place since the beginning of the pandemic, most of them who haven't been evicted from somewhere else?
I've talked to campers that have been in the same place for 3 years. Just a few minutes ago, I was in Lower Park helping one of the last campers out of an amazing camp. And he said he'd been there 11 years.
Mm.
And now he's torn up. All his stuff has got to go. He's got to find storage for it. He's got to find some other kind of housing. It's tragic. When we help the people move, you know, the women are in tears. This completely turns their life upside down. to have what little shelter and organization they had finally managed to get together for themselves completely uprooted, and it makes it impossible for them to move forward with their lives, to get a job, or to seek out the services that it takes to get your feet on the ground. These sweeps are just so counterproductive. It is really making the problem worse.
And I thought it was particularly callous what I heard the police saying to the campers when I was helping people at the Triangle, where you were also. What are they telling people that they should go do?
Well, I talked to the police there, and I talked to the campers, and I asked the police, where can the people go? And the sergeant in charge looked me in the eye and said, the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to go to the sidewalk, but they have to leave 4 feet wide space for wheelchair access, but they can sit on the sidewalk.
Right.
Don't sit there too long.
Right.
Wow.
No shelter of any kind.
None.
And all the personal possessions that all of us accumulate with any length of time at all, extra blankets,
right.
extra clothes, toiletries,
right.
food, any of the things that people have that they need, they depend on to survive these very meager lives,
right.
had ended up in dumpsters, as we saw.
Right.
And,
yeah, they're very tragic.
Without any accountability about where those dumpsters were going to end up, or, I mean, it really is tragic, because some people, that's the only thing of value they have, and those things ended up in dumpsters. Really, really hard.
It's how they're maintaining themselves to be able to get their lives back together, and then to have it uprooted like this. Makes it worse. You make them more destitute. You make them more desperate. Do we really want 100 more desperate people roaming the streets
200.
At night because they are not allowed to rest anywhere?
Yeah.
This is not productive. This is not civilized.
Right.
To be civilized would mean that you have civil response to situations like this. If it was a tornado, we'd have tents up at the fairgrounds the next day, but it's poverty, and we're afraid to look at it.
Mm.
And that's a crying shame. It's an absolute crying shame.
Yes.
We have vacant property. We have this housing crisis. The woman who runs a chamber of commerce had to step over a dead guy to get to work. How bad does it have to get before we'll recognize, get a load of this, Chris, one trip. An ambulance to Enloe costs about the same amount as a year at a tiny home village.
Mm-hmm.
One trip in a cop car to Oroville, booked in the county jail, costs as much. Book him, let him go the next day. The cost for that police car ride, for the policeman, for the booking agent, for the other people involved in the process, it runs into, a few thousand dollars. And that's just about all it takes to house somebody in a micro shelter or in a tiny home village. In Eugene, community-supported shelters, all volunteers, put together over the course of about 5 years, 150 of these micro shelters, put them in church parking lots. You know, a church can say that tending sheep is their religion, that taking care of Jesus said, tend my sheep. And this means take care of your neighbors. All our religious teaching says, do unto others as you have them do unto you. Love your neighbors. And these are not just isolated, etherical statements. This is wisdom, because doing it is rewarding. When I help homeless folks, they are so grateful. I do this because it makes me feel good.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Come
on, people.
So there's a couple of realistic things.
Smile on your brother. Let's get together. Love one another right now.
Charles, you You got into a lot of trouble because you were you had a truck that said Chico Housing Action Team on it, and I don't want to go too much into those troubles, but of course the city council takes any opportunity to go against anybody, so they tried to take away money from the Chico Housing Action Team after you helped as an individual, which is your right, to move people. And I had borrowed a truck that had a chat bumper sticker on it, too. So it looked like more chat people were there. But would you recommend that people with trucks, if there is an eviction, help those people move?
It will make you feel good. You want to feel good? Help people. Mm-hmm. They'll be grateful.
Right.
Gandhi said,
so we need to
happiness,
know.
Happiness cannot come from things.
Right.
It can come from work and pride in what you do and love in your neighbors.
So how can people find out if there has been a 72-hour notice for evictions for these large camps?
It'll be all over Facebook. It'll be headline news. If they've given notice to the two smaller camps, by Caltrans has, that those people need help moving between now and Monday at 8 a.m. But wow, if the Chico Police Department gives 72-hour notice to Comanche or Windchime, it will be a disaster. It will be a sociological disaster. You'll be putting hundreds of people in a more desperate situation, and roaming the streets at night.
Yeah.
It's not an effective.
It's not safe for anybody.
For situation.
It's not safe for the unhoused. It's not safe for the community. To have so many people without anything, so destitute.
Can I say just a couple more things about?
Yeah,
the,
we have.
The
we have about
at the triangle.
We have about 2 minutes.
It was so funny that some people said, "Oh, this is bad that some people are helping some other people." Wait a minute. I was encouraged by the Chico Police Department. The Chico Police Department welcomed us. They said, thank you for doing this. The Chico Police Department was completely in favor of citizens helping the campers move. If we didn't move their stuff, then the Chico Police Department was going to have to do it. We were taking their job away from them. We were doing their job for them. They were thrilled. The police were very welcoming and happy that we were there.
Yeah, they,
that had nothing to do with that operation. It never came up at any meeting.
Mm-hmm.
There was no discussion about it. Just because a vehicle has a chat sticker on it is a laughably flimsy connection. I've seen a lot of different stickers on a lot of vehicles. I don't think you can take that to the bank.
Right. Yeah, I was waved in also. I had I was led in by the police in order to assist people. Charles, now we want to think of what we haven't talked about. We know that we need help during evictions. We need to put pressure on the city council for this land that is north of town out by the airport.
Right, right.
As it is available.
It's offered to us for free.
It's not perfect. It is far from a city center, but there is some shopping available.
Yes.
We will need help.
It's just a short walk. It's like about three blocks from Cohasset and Lassen, where there's a little commercial area. It's about a mile and a half to Esplanade and Eaton that has a commercial area. It's a little isolated. That's one of its big pluses, is that it has no residential neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
It has no commercial neighbors. It's completely isolated.
Okay.
And we could put in, our proposal calls for a standalone campground that we could put in just a matter of a few days. We could have a tank. I've designed a hot and cold, a passive a water shower system, so people could have showers. We can have porta potties. We can have propane and solar, and we can have RVs there, standalone RVs that would be fenced. Or we could have a monitor at the gate. This is a golden opportunity that everybody's got to encourage the city to move forward on. We want them to resolve the easement issue that the city has violated with the old easement, and get Ed a proper easement straight across from Thorn Tree Drive across the city, vacant city property, to his property that's isolated in the middle of all the city property. He got condemned for the airport clear zone. And so his property is just west of that, and it's out of the airport clear zone, but he doesn't have proper access. And the little access that the city did give him 30 years ago now has been encroached upon by a pump house, and the bike path has made it almost impossible for him to get into this property with his equipment. So he used to grow alfalfa there and hasn't been able to do anything on it for quite a while.
Mm.
You need a proper easement into that property and take advantage of a campground that could pay for itself. We could charge the campers a nominal fee per night or per month. A lot of these folks have a few dollars in Social Security, and then they're going to have buy-in. It's going to be, you know, they're going to have pride in being there and take care of the place. We're going to have volunteers there helping with the trash removal, and we'll also have waste management. This is really a doable proposal that is now on the desk of five city councilors. We need to push for its approval.
Okay, so everyone, if you want to write to the city council, just go to their website and you can get the directions there. Otherwise, hope to see you all April 6th at 5 p.m. prior to the city council meetings. And you can also attend those city council meetings and speak up in support or against the things that you find important. Charles Withune, thank you so much for being my guest today on
Happy
the
to,
Peace and Justice.
To. Be able to talk on the subject. Thank you, Chris, for the opportunity.
Thank you for your work. Hango. Okay, so I want to put on my next guest, but I also, there is something I wanted to say about friends that have left us, you know, because it's gotten pretty intense lately. It's this little roll of the dice has we have lost in the community that I am associated with, Bert Levy, Daniel, whose name I can never say, Klevesci-Shu, who is a friend, even though I can't say his last name, as well as Al Rojas, who is one of the founders of the UFW, the United Farm Workers, and also our dear, dear friend, David Sisk, also known as Sisko, a wonderful artist and community member. And I just wanted to play a song for these guys and also for all those dead in Atlanta and Boulder of police, I mean, not police violence, of assault rifles and high-capacity magazines, you know, they're terrible deaths. Anyway, it's been a very intense week, and I love you all, and I just want this beautiful song for you. Here we go. Anathema's Revolution. And this is Chris. It's a Peace and Justice program here on KZFR, your community radio station. My last guest for the Peace and Justice program this Friday is a man who I've gotten to know a bit over the last few months. He is a private person and didn't want any kind of an introduction. I'm going to just use initials to identify him, but he has important viewpoints, important life experiences that I wanted him to be able to share with the listeners. And welcome, JP.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're with us today. You came to Chico in the early 90s, and you've pretty much grown up here. You went to PV High School, and I was wondering, as a man of color, what was it like for you being here? You know, when were you first aware of race as something that could cause hurt?
Well, you know, I'd say, in all honesty, that probably started, you know, 5-6 years old. I grew up in predominantly white areas my whole life. I didn't much think about it as a child. I just kind of, you know, you don't think about skin color too much until people start telling you, start pointing out your skin color. And at a young age for children, they're blatantly honest. You know, they'll just ask you, you know, why is your skin brown? Why is your hair curly? When I was very young, actually, a funny story, elementary school I went to, all the kids started wondering if I was related to famous singers, just because I was black and they didn't know, you know, what black people were about. They associated us with pop singers. So they'd say, are you Michael Jackson's brother? Or they'd ask me if I was related to athletes. I'm going, no, what is this conversation? So I guess that's the earliest memories I have of, you know, people pointing out to me that, you know, my race was a factor.
Yeah, it's so odd when you're in these areas that are all white, you know, that must have been really strange to carry with you. And so at a certain point when you were in Chico, I know you wanted to skip over some of your childhood stuff, but you started to be more and more involved in the community. Then you went to Butte College and then Chico State. And I was just wondering what experiences you wanted to share with the listeners about growing up here as a black man, growing up black in Chico.
Yeah, and I'd like to elaborate on that in terms of growing up as, you know, a lighter-skinned black man, which is, you know, unfortunately, an easier feat even than a darker skin. The shade of your blackness is going to make a difference in your life. You know, having white folks in my family, you tend to grow up adaptable. You tend to have both sides. You can fit in both the white environments and the black environments, and so it's a totally different dynamic for us. And so it's hard for me to speak in complete inclusivity of the entire black experience, for I think that I get a lot of more doors open to me than others might. But in terms of in Chico, extremely inviting. Pleasant Valley High School was, in my generation, we call it the Sierra Nevada generation. It was when the brewery was really up and coming. We were all about chivas and hacky sacks and peace and tolerance and kind of a lot of the populace is what we called yuppie hippies. You know, people who, you know, kept those standards about themselves of, you know, eating well, being peaceful, being tolerant, but also, you know, keeping their economic stability together and growing businesses here in town. So it was a very pleasant experience, to be honest with you. I loved high school. I hear a lot of stories of people saying, oh, I hate high school. Our high school was very, all the cliques and the groups at Pleasant Valley High during my years growing up here were very united. We were united. It didn't matter if you were branded as a skater or a jock or black, white, Mexican. We all, for some reason, had unity. And I'm not sure what that was, but that was what I loved so much and why my parents moved us to Chico, because we heard the reputation of this place, very inviting, friendly, and just dynamic. As college came, I saw that kind of wane a little, if you will, kind of slip off in terms of diversity slowly, and now to the present time, seemingly non-existent at times.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that there used to be fraternities at Chico State, black fraternities, and now there aren't any. Is that so?
Sure. I'm not sure of the presence there. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see them anymore. During early 2000s, when I was in college, it was a very big presence. I mean, there was the Cane Dancers, and you saw working class black families out at the concerts in the parks, at the farmers markets. Anywhere you go, you see regular black people, and you would see fraternities, donning their letters, donning their Greek letters. And there were several at the time. Dance competitions were a big deal on campus for them. And it's grown, from what my understanding is, nearly non-existent. I can't remember the last time I've seen a ethnic fraternity wearing their sweatshirt out here around town. So that's kind of a disappointment. And there's a lot of development going on the campus. I see it. I just hope that there's some sort of push to get that diversity back, as well as developing the buildings themselves.
So over time, there's less diversity and less even tolerance in the community. There's more negativity. What do you attribute that to, and kind of what is the timeline on it that you sensed or that you experienced?
I've talked to a lot of people about this, and it's hard to grasp and separate between what the energy is coming from the pandemic and just the frenzy behind this isolation everybody's feeling and lack of employment and distancing and all these unnatural things we've been up against this past year or so. It's hard to separate what is that and what is just an actual sense of discrimination and prejudice contingent upon race, class, gender, creed, socioeconomic status. I do know that it's really upticked in the past 2 years. I mean, in an exaggerated sense. What that could be attributed to, who knows? I feel like if you look around and just take the time to talk with people, the answers are kind of there, and they're more simple than we kind of try to complicate them,
Do you associate it with the horrors of the campfire and people having to, a different community moving to Chico in such large numbers?
I think it's hard to rule that out, it's hard to understand how people deal with tragedy. What I do know is there's a lot of anger and a lot of hatred and a lot of just division in Chico, in this area, all around, and of course in the country. It's just hard to kind of pinpoint what that's attributed to, but it's glaring. Yeah, it's certainly glaring that the cultural mending of these two areas has caused a little bit of a tiff, if you would say, in terms of happiness and functionality in this area.
Right, and you've been involved, we just had Charles Withhewn on, and we were talking about the unhoused, and you've been involved with helping homeless people move. But as a person of color, have you had specific experiences yourself of this this negativity or kind of a more dangerous Chico?
Oh, absolutely. I was raised to not, to try not to say it's a race thing. It's not because I'm black. Try not to say that as often as possible. But every once in a while, it is. And that's the reality. I've told you in earlier conversation, I've heard the N-word more times in this past 2 years of my life right here in my hometown, more times probably than my entire time on the planet. It's just used. It's just prolific. It's out there. Nobody holds each other accountable when they hear it. It's just kind of thrown around flippantly in our culture here lately. It's disappointing. It's just a word. But I think it speaks volumes to, you know, the ideology that is out there in mass right now. And it's just kind of a disrespect. And I would say that it's, you know, some of that is just a sheer numerical thing. You know, there's not a lot of black people around to stand up and do anything about it, period. And it's not just about black people, of course. You know, it's any of the protected classes. And so, yeah, it's been pretty bad. And, you know, again, racism has taken on a new tone. It's very passive-aggressive. It's picks and pokes in the mass throughout months of time. They just pick at you and pick at you and pick at you, and they're very silent and they're very stealthy. You know, racism is a closet ideology these days. It almost needs to be taken on and looked at as a new word. We need to find a new word for it to describe it, because it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not just microaggressions. It's bigger than that. In your case, this has really harmed you. It's hurt you, and it's caused you to really have a, you know, a difficult time. And I wonder if that is true in the community, because we were saying this morning how it seems like people are less willing to engage, less, you know, I mean, it's not just COVID, it's the fact that people don't trust one another. There's sort of this, what did you call it, hidden realities.
Sure.
And so what do you think that we as people who care about other people, people who want to be anti-racist, people who want to have a sense of community with everyone, what do you think we could or should be doing?
You know, I really feel like it comes down to getting back to the basics of unity. Not only in our community, but the entire country. We've taken on this, you know, everybody has lost, like you said, trust and, frankly, control of our lives. And I think people are frantic to regain control. And so we kind of, what I've really perceived to be is a lot of people forming, you know, essentially gangs, you know, essentially blue-collar gangs, if you will, and just everybody's trying to dominate with their specific way of thinking. Whereas, you know, the foundations of this country are a melting pot, you know, diversity, individuality, accepting others with tolerance. And I think we've lost track of that. And I think it's really important to just get back to the basics and start looking in the mirror instead of pointing outwards. And the judgment and hate is just, it's got to go. It's not working. For those of us who are more peaceful, it's going to be a hard road, because, you know, the anti to that is just a lot of aggression. So how do you fight aggression while being peaceful? Well, if you find out, let me know.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us.
Yeah.
I was waiting to hear.
Yeah. I've been looking for the answer. You know, you're amongst a lot of us in the community who have been doing what we can to be positive and, you know, perpetuate a movement of love and tolerance, as opposed to assassination and judgment and hatred and essentially poking and persecuting anybody who is an individual outside of the, you know, who deems themselves the core controlling group at this juncture. I just think it's real simple to get back to the basics. We are a country that was founded on principles of unity, diversity, and tolerance. And I just think it's that simple. Deal with
Yeah. It's simple, yeah. But it's still racking my brain about, you know, how,
yeah.
how, you know, like I responded to something on the Action News Now website, and I was attacked from maybe 10 people, went for the jugular. And, you know, it was kind of shocking because, well, I didn't do anything to deserve it. You know, I didn't say anything that florid, that outrageous. You know, I just made a comment that I thought would be helpful. Anyway, I really appreciate what you're saying, JP, and I was wondering, do you want to talk about this some more, about either solutions or more about the problem itself? Because I think people who listen to this show, I mean, they may have kind of gotten a sense of it. You know, we've been living through this Trump administration now for 4 years and seeing the rise of a, you know, extremist right-wing, racist, white supremacist culture. And, you know, I do think it all kind of, for me, it all ties together. But I also feel like there has to be a way that we can chip away and start to heal some of this division. I mean, but so much of it is like a polemic. You know, how do you get rid of people's ideas when they're so far-fetched and wrong-headed and counterproductive and ugly, you know?
Absolutely. You know, and I just have to reiterate that I firmly believe that it starts with yourself. It starts with self-accountability, and really, really, you know, unless you're perfect, unless you're a saint, you have no time to point outwards and look anywhere. Mm. If we would all just kind of get, you know, understanding of this idea that, you know, perfection, it starts with yourself. You know, it's, and trust. We need to stop lashing out at the police, for one, in my opinion. I believe they need to be trained better, paid better, and then become, you know, a part of our community that is looked at as they're supposed to be. And that has to be earned, obviously, but, you know, that's another subject. But, you know, obviously that's a big deal right now. Nobody's calling the police, or they're calling too much to waste their time. But I believe that the law enforcement issue needs to be addressed.
Right. Yeah, you had some insider information about one of Desmond Phillips' killers that I thought was very chilling. And it's a whole nother issue, because that could be fixed if we had a city council with political will. Again, it's a lot of this goes back to who we vote for and who we allow to have power over us. You know, they're supposed to represent us, but they disempower us, you know, when they have you know, racists and people that, you know, are on the police force that shouldn't be.
Sure. I believe that our system of checks and balances and integrity, which in terms of abiding to written law, has completely fallen apart in several aspects, state, federal, all of the above. And we've already have a constitution in the United States. I feel like lawlessness has become the new norm. It's become more about who you know as opposed to just what the law is. You know, I really think we need to get back to this noble integrity. You know, really, you know, when you wear a uniform, you honor the policies of that uniform, you know, completely. We have too many vigilantes, too many disobeying the law. I've heard a lot of people say that we've got an integrity issue in our country right now. It's a social issue of who we are as people. You know, and that's going to take some tweaking. It's just going to take some awareness.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you, and I'm a little bit of a lawbreaker myself at times, but I always for a good reason. You know, JP, do you want to add anything else? Because I sure appreciated your time and the fact that, you know, I know it's, sometimes it's difficult to talk about these things because you have so much history that, you know, you even, this is the tip of the iceberg for you of what you are willing to share with us today. But how would you like to round this out, this conversation?
You know, I would just definitely like to thank you for having me on. And, you know, in terms of the Chico community, I would like to, you know, reach out and just suggest that we remember who we are, you know, who we are before the pandemic, before the fires, you know, when we used to walk through the park and everybody, the tradition was to say hello and mm-hmm. give a pleasant smile. And to embrace tolerance. And, you know, I would just like to, you know, round things up with, let's get back to, you know, the basics.
Yeah.
Love and tolerance as opposed to hate, because it takes a lot less energy. And frankly, it's a lot more fun. Hate is just boring, right?
I know. It used to be such a nice laid-back town. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and I hope to have you back when you're ready.
Thanks, Chris. And I would just like to... Chico Strong.
Yeah.
I would just like to say, let's not forget about that.
Yeah.
Chico Strong.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll be having Playing Dead coming up here soon in your Friday lineup of wonderful programming here at KZFR. I have a little bit of a minute, and since we're on the topic of policing a little bit, I have a concern that Chico City police are getting drones, and I have to warn people about drones used as a surveillance tool. We've already seen this during wars where they've been used for tracking people and then targeting them. And there's no way to control whether or not drones are invading your privacy, even though in the protocol of the City of Chico website, it says that they will not be used, you know, indiscriminately. But there's no way to know that they're not doing that. So there's, you know, in terms of militarization of police, they have now all these things, riot gear, tear gas, rubber bullets. Since 1997, the U.S. Department of Defense's 1033 program has distributed more than $7.4 billion worth of military weapons to over 8,000 law enforcement agencies. So it's really quite terrifying, the power of these police departments and what they're doing. And I encourage you to support the groups that are doing the work, and that would be Justice for Desmond, or CC4J, Chico Community for Justice. And also, I have about another huge pile of things here to share with you, but I think I'm just going to end with a song and give my appreciation for all of you who supported the station during our pledge drive. A love out to all those the families of those we have lost in this last week or so or more. And let Ray come in and do Playing Dead here in a sec. I'd like to thank our underwriters first. That would be Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit chicocourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And the Four Bay Aquatic Center, hosting a preseason extravaganza on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 9th, 10th, and 11th. The center will be offering watercraft rentals the entire weekend, complimentary for school kids while supplies last, and they'll be selling gently used safety equipment as well. For details, visit forbayaquaticcenter.com or on Facebook. So that's another underwriter I hadn't read before, but I really appreciate that they are involved with KCFR. We really appreciate that. Last thing, I guess I have another minute left, and I don't want to leave out the fact of that there's much that we could be doing in terms of stopping mass shootings. I know people feel that there's nothing that we can do, but there is a lot we can do. And so more guns equals more deaths, and so it's very important that we try to get as many guns off the streets as we can. The mass shootings aren't really the main problem. There are many, many other deaths that are less than four deaths, which is the definition of a mass shooting. More than half of gun deaths are suicides, so suicide prevention is a very important part of this. And the filibuster is pro-gun, and so those who are trying to remove the filibuster, I think we could get more legislation passed if we move through that. It's very important. And if you want to be involved in this discussion, you can get hold of your representatives. There is a lot of push right now to ban assault rifles and high-capacity magazines. Our representatives are Dianne Feinstein and Becerra. And you can reach them through 202-224-3121. It's a congressional switchboard to reach anybody in Congress. And if you want them to ban assault weapons, you got to let them know about that and strengthening background checks for gun buyers. So I'll leave it at that. And here is the community calendar, and peace to all of you, okay?
Listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. 1078 Gallery in Chico is calling for art submissions. New and established artists are welcome to submit art pieces for their current topic, Imagine Together, Hopeful Visions for Our Future. This submission process is unique in that they are asking for written stories, recorded dances, as well as sculptures and art pieces. Creativity is highly encouraged, and they are only asking for donations with submissions, and the deadline is this Sunday, March 28th. For more information and how to participate, go to 1078gallery.org. Any graduating seniors at Chico State out there can drop off items for the 2021 time capsule. They're asking that you mail your items or that you drop off the items at the Chico State Bookstore Mondays through Thursdays until April 27th. It will be an interesting time capsule this year, to be sure. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
It's time for Playing Dead, music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon from 1 to 3. My name's Ray. I'll be your host today. Got a kicking show really early. I think it's the fifth Scarlet Begonias. Really, really, really nice standalone estimated profit and Scarlet Begonias both in the first set. So we'll get right to it. Let's thank our supporters and get right on it. If you jump over to our Facebook page, Playing Dead on KZFR, you'll find today's set list with some photos. Throw me a like. I'll get you a shout out. All right, we want to thank Garden Connection, open 7 days a week at 7-4. Start over. Poop, take two. And by Garden Connection, open 7 days a week at 1740 Feather River Boulevard in Oroville. Garden Connection specializes in organic soils and fertilizers, organic pest control, hydroponics, greenhouse supplies, and more. You can reach Garden Connection at 342-7762. And also by Chico Call Center, employing locally since 1999. Chico Call Center is rapidly expanding and is now hiring new employees for their Nord Avenue office. Chico Call Center works with over 200 newspapers nationwide, renewing customer subscriptions. Compensation packages include hourly, commission, and nightly cash payouts. More information by visiting chicocallcenter.com. All right, let's get right to it. I got a bunch of great music for you. 320-77